This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Just want to do things my own way, you know.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears.
Fans, it's Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Oh, coming in with the Godfather there, man. As promised, a little Godfather talk here in honor of the 40th anniversary of the great film. The first movie, of course. Oh, we did it a couple weeks ago, talking about mostly the first movie. And got some feedback from you folks out there on that. Most of you saying, man, I wish I could have been on there, Phil. I could have added this. I could have added that. I had my own thoughts on The Godfather. It's greatness. If this podcast is about one thing, folks, it's not just music. It's not just art. Life. It is an exploration, a search, a journey for what is great in any field. I'm always trying to identify what makes something really stand out. You know, as a music guy or a songwriter, you know, you can listen to Dark Side of the Moon or something, or, you know, some band, or watch a film and just go, man, it's great. It's amazing. It's harder to say, man, but what exactly is it? Say, well, it's the acting, the lighting, and all these kinds of things, the music, it's everything. But that's kind of general. You got to kind of break it down and say, man, but here's what this movie does, or here's what this song achieves that its rivals can only aspire to and fail and gnash their teeth. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Having a ball, man. The weather's getting warmer. Oh, it's just an odious sign. Warmth coming into the state of Texas. You hope we're not at 100 degrees in April. Good grief. Looking forward to my Colorado trip, my yearly time spent up there for weeks on end. Looking forward to that already. I know you are too. Spring break time this time of year. Man, we've got the new Phil Pritchett and the full band live in Corpus Christi starting to make it out there, the digital outlets. We don't know exactly when that'll be, but it might be on iTunes here very shortly if it's not already. So check that out. iTunes, we're going to have it on p2tunes.com. You can get it there as well. Digital-only release, although we sold many burned copies of that CD. Lovingly burned by myself here at the studio. When we played in Corpus Christi a few weeks ago. Well, 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 things are going well, everybody. It is that time of year. Private Party April is here again. Already got a lot of you lined up to come play at your houses and all sorts of places of repute, both ill and good. We're looking forward to seeing all of y'all. Kept the schedule reasonably clean of just your average bar shows in April. Give you guys a chance to book the full band, either me solo or the band, to come to your house in April. So we're doing a bunch of those shows for some old friends, people I hadn't seen in a while. The band and I playing on some ranches and in people's living rooms and by your swimming pools, etc. Still got a few dates open in late April. I want to say that last weekend we got a Friday and Saturday open. But shoot me an email, phil@philpritchett.com. Say, Phil, come play for us. Well, it is the 40th anniversary of The Godfather. How can you do The Godfather talk in one pitiful 15-minute segment like I did a couple weeks ago. You can't sum it all up. You can't capture all the greatness, you know, nor can you do it in two segments like we're trying to do here. The first film we talked about, Brando, the greatness of The Godfather, how The Godfather films, you know, maybe one of the first that didn't cartoonishly portray the mobster, the gangster, kind of in the old James Cagney. Just, hey, I'm going to teach you a lesson, see? You know, this were families drawn together, bounded by blood and loyalty, and it's very appealing for the viewer in a very disturbing kind of way. It was interesting, I was reading online about, you know, just how the whole thing came to be. I've been just doing a lot of research for the segment and stuff like that. Poring over documents, you know me. But you know how Francis Ford Coppola, the director, was actually like the third or fourth guy down the chain to direct it. The Godfather, of course, a very successful and famous book by Mario Puzo. And, you know, in a lot of directors at the time, were shying away from trying to do a good book. I mean, how many times have you heard that, man, it was some great book, and then the movie was terrible? That's so often. You see a good movie, you go, man, the movie's nothing. You ought to read the book. It's always the book that wins out. More times than not. You can just put more detail in it. There's more room for imagination. And, but in few cases, man, I would say that's probably not true. Two notable, exceptions, I would say, in this case are The Godfather. The book is kind of, it goes off on some tangents, man, into some of the lives of, the different characters that you don't really know that well or, see in the film that much. So Coppola did a great job. And Puzo, I think, helped with the screenplay as well. They did a good job of kind of editing out some of those tangents that they went off on into making a good couple of films. Again, I'm excluding The Godfather 3 in all of this discussion. Oh, that's, you know, it's one of those things that's not worthy of my time here. Not a fan of that film as much. So we're sticking to Godfather 1 and 2 here. But well edited. And Jaws was the other one. Jaws was Peter Benchley, I think, wrote the book about the man-eating shark. But you read that book, man, it's ponderous. After seeing the film, the film is so great. Acting so good, and the story, and you read the book, and there's all these weird tangents of what the characters are doing and creepy stuff, and you're like, oh, man, it kind of leaves you with a sour taste in your mouth. So in those two cases, both, you know, 70s films, The Godfather and Jaws, stick with the movies, man. Although The Godfather, the book, is well worth reading, as I talked about it a couple weeks ago. I had to read it for a college class. Well, man, we kind of get more into The Godfather 2, which is, man, almost as good or better than the first. I won't say it's better than the first because Brando's not in it. But that is where we get to see the young Don, which is the most fascinating. I think part of the first two films is going back to see how Don Corleone, the great Mafia Don, came to be. And you see that in a lot of flashbacks, of course, in the second film. A young Robert De Niro playing, of course, young Vito Corleone, and how he's just kind of making his way in the neighborhood there as a man of good reputation and a man who can get things done. Fascinating to me is just it's a real American story, I think, is the quintessential appeal of The Godfather, and it really comes out in this in Godfather 2. That's very highlighted by Coppola, the young boy Vito Corleone, 9 years old, sick, coming over from Sicily. The Statue of Liberty there, Ellis Island, and the look on all those immigrants' faces, you know, looking up there at the statue and coming in, and all the hopes in their eyes, and there's this little boy there, you know, an orphan, just coming ashore, and you know, God knows what's going to happen to him. And so that it's an American story in a lot of ways, violence and all. It appeals, I think, to all of us. But it's fascinating that The Godfather 2, we of course get to see the young Vito, you know, kind of hook up with some ne'er-do-wells there in the neighborhood, Clemenza and Tessio. He kind of has his three guys. They kind of get together and they're stealing. And kind of stealing rugs and dresses and making some money. And you see how he kind of gets sucked into this underworld and starts to see that, hey, there's another way to make money and provide for my family. And but you always see the Don, the young Don, treating people kindly, except for the people he shoots. I mean, it's so great to watch. As one of the great scenes is when the Don, when he starts to get a little bit older, he's a man of reputation there in the neighborhood. As he walks down the street, people will say, "Hey, take this, Don Corleone." And they try to give him oranges, and he can't accept, or he'll accept it and say, "Hey, if I can never do anything for you, you come tell me," you know. And this is how, we kind of talked about, he wasn't a thug. He didn't just go around beating people's skulls in. He did favors for people, and then he would accept favors from them in return. This gave him a great sense of power and a great deal of respect, and that's really the true power of Don Corleone. I love the scene, though, with the landlord. His wife comes to Don Corleone and says, this old woman, this friend of mine, has been kicked out of her apartment. The landlord is unreasonable. She had a dog, and he kicked her out. And the young Vito just kind of rolls his eyes like, oh, gosh. So he approaches the landlord, of course, and says, "And the woman can stay. I'll give you some money for rent. Do this favor for me." Kind of like the old, in the first film with the producer. He doesn't just go hit the guy in the head first. He says, hey. He tries to persuade the landlord to let the woman stay. He says, "Who are you talking to me? You know, you've got a lot of nerve talking to me like that." Then Don Corleone pulls out some money and says, "Here, take this money as a sign, ask around the neighborhood about me. I know how to return a favor." You know, he tries persuading the guy. Then he tries reciprocity. "Take this money and I'll do something for you." And then the guy kind of refuses and storms off, the landlord. But a few weeks later, of course, the landlord has done his due diligence. He has asked around the neighborhood about the young man who offered him money and told him about to keep the old woman. And, of course, the guy just comes back, hat in hands, just, "Oh, Don Corleone, what a misunderstanding. Of course she can stay." Of course, he goes walking around. People are like, "Man, you don't cross Vito Corleone. If he asks you to do a favor for him in return. You do what he says. You don't want to be on his bad side." And then, of course, there was no doubt murmurings that, hey, man, everybody thinks that he was the guy that shot the Black Hand, the old Don Fanucci, the old Black Hand of the neighborhood. So that is how the Don builds his power. The other compelling thing to me on a more macro scale is, man, and this question was asked in the band Van many times, what the hell happened to Al Pacino? What the hell happened to Al Pacino? He comes into The Godfather. He was unknown before he came to The Godfather. He is a calm, measured guy with a steely stare, with hard eyes. He is just, "That's my family, Kay. It's not me. My father." You know, he just very measured tones. He has his outbursts in The Godfather. He does. "Don't talk to me about my business, Kay. Don't talk to me about my business." You know, he has his outbursts. But he is a measured, cold, calculating man. And in a lot of his early movies, I think Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico, kind of more of that same kind of character. And at some point, I guess it was around Scarface and after that, he just became cocaine crazy Al, just eyes bulging out of his sockets, just just crazy as hell. And I just, every time I see him in a movie now and since, I do not see Michael Corleone. I see a guy with a fallen face, with bug eyes, hollow cheekbones, just screaming and overacting. I mean, The Godfather 3 is comical in that regard. You know, he has spiky gray hair and just, "They keep pulling me back in! Yeah, I'm just like, where? I mean, wouldn't an old Michael Corleone just be even more measured, even more quiet, even more steely resolved? You know, just in a chair, just, "Those were the old days. I'm not like that anymore." I think he would just play it a little colder, a little quieter, like he did in the first ones. Am I right or am I wrong? And now he's just kind of been a crazy joke, man. A son of a woman. I guess it started around Scarface, you know, is when he really just went over there. "Say hello to my little friend," all that stuff. And, man, never really got back as an actor to the Michael Corleone, the greatness that he had in The Godfather. Oh, well, what do I know? He did pretty well for himself. Well, it is our third and final week with my good friend Luke Coffey talking movies, music, etc., and all of his experiences therein. Luke Coffey, actor, producer, director, will be in here. Stay tuned next. Romans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 podcast, enlightening your musical life one breath at a time here into this microphone. I hope you're enjoying this week's broadcast, folks. I certainly am. One of the big reasons is my good friend Luke Coffey has dropped by yet again. Actor, filmmaker, producer.
Phil, it's good to be back.
How you doing, man?
Damn, it's good. Damn, I'm good. I'm real good.
Last couple of weeks, we've been talking about, the football movie we're doing, mm-hmm. talking about your experience in acting and commercials, and you're producing your first feature film. Language of a Broken Heart is going to be out there in festivals, theaters this summer. Also, Old Man Football, our football documentary with music by yours truly, Phil, in there.
That's right.
Man,
Phil Pritchett.
That's right. Amen. We have a big theme that I always talk about to the musicians about is, man, the changing landscape of the digital realm.
Yes.
Making music, not making CDs. Everything's free and floating around and streaming. And
free sharing.
Yes. Now, it's always been my theory, and you can feel free to disagree with this, but from my observation, the film marketing business has always been a little behind the music business as far as, we had CDs
right.
for a long time in music, and then movies, you still went to Blockbuster and actually rented a VHS for a long time.
Right.
And then it was like, well, you know, but then eventually it was DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole record business was shattered by the birth of Napster and iTunes, people not buying physical product. But lo and behold, they love to point out, DVD sales are running rampant, people buying them left and right. And it seems like now that music has been free online in some fashion for several years, you're starting to see more and more noise from movie studios and people complaining about everything from, you know, YouTube, complaining about Netflix, complaining about clashing with them on royalty rates and iTunes. And it's starting to come to a head. And the day is going to come soon where you spend your entire life and $1 million making your feature film. And before you even get out of bed the next morning, it's free streaming online and beautiful widescreen HD, all 2 hours of it for free. And the movie business is going to have to cope with that in some way, in a very real fashion. Now, you and I, not being Steven Spielberg, who's going to bitch about it nonstop like Elton John bitches about iTunes or something, we're not used to making those millions.
Right.
You know, being yourself like my kind of an upstart, kind of a guy that says, as long as it's out there, we'll find a way to make it pay.
Exactly.
I don't know. What's your take on where, when you got into the business several years ago, where it was, oh, man, you need an agent and you need to go to Hollywood and all this,
right.
And where you think now?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's been a developing, crazy media world in the last, 20 years for sure, and specifically in the last 10 with the film arena. We've gone from, where it's not a true film unless it comes out in the theater. It's not like it's not up to par if it's not a theater release. Mm-hmm. And where now sometimes they are releasing the DVD the same day it comes out in theaters.
Right.
We've got indie filmmakers that, 20 years ago wouldn't even have, the film festival circuit is new.
Yeah.
And really with Sundance. And that began really the voyage for a indie film director or filmmaker to not live in Hollywood to be able to raise their own capital and make their own film. And, so that is now it's with the onset of YouTube and, Vimeo and now Netflix, HBO has their own online streaming for their shows that are very much of cinematic value and epic nature. And so the consumer is looking towards I hope that there will remain a physical theater that folks will venture off to and to escape the world and not just do it in their home theater.
Right.
But it's changing where you can. You can stream it right to your home theater now and watch it there and not even have to leave your house.
You know, it's like I said a few weeks ago on this show, fans will remember, There is a tough. It's tough to go to theaters a little bit these days. I said, you know, why would I want to go to somewhere where I have to sit in an uncomfortable chair with some guy, with someone coming up behind me and spilling a Coke on my head?
Right.
When me with five kids, I can sit in my own house in an uncomfortable chair and have someone pour a Coke on my head. why would I pay that to go elsewhere?
Exactly.
I have the same experience.
Pay $12 in case. $12 both, plus your $10.
The floor is just as sticky in both places. Right. You know, the food, the same. Popcorn, whatever. But, yeah, it is. You do wonder about the... You'd like to think there's always a place for the theater, but... I don't know. Do you still go to movies a lot? You go to the big screen a lot?
You know, there's
or
ones
do you
that,
wait and just kind of
no.
Watch
there's it? Ones that I definitely want to go see in the theater because that theater experience not everybody has. You know, Dolby 5.1 surround sound in their you know their home theater or their you know TV.
Of course.
Of course. But it's just you know something about the big screen, seeing it on the big screen, bigger than life, is just and going into a dark room. I love that about feature film, you know, and I feel like when everything moves to TV, that's kind of sad to me. I mean, will I adapt to it?
Even if your TV is 60 inches wide on HD, you know what I mean?
But there's also it's kind of like the difference between stage acting and on-screen acting. There's the audience reaction. I mean, it's kind of like to feel everyone else in there feel what you're feeling. There's something about the power of the audience being in a big auditorium together and not just...
going to see a live band in a club is just... There's something about it.
Right.
Than just saying, oh, I watched them on YouTube the other night. You're kind of like, well, that's not the same thing.
Yeah.
You know,
I say that where the feeling of the audience when other people you hear are crying in a sincere movie and you're feeling that, you know, that this audience being moved, like this wave coming across the audience, there's something about that in the art of, you know, feature filmmaking that I think is beautiful when it is in a theater that you know, you're sharing this experience with people you don't know, I think.
Right.
And that's just like you would at a concert, you know, and you're surrounded by others you don't know. So that's why I don't want. I hope they don't ever dismiss the physical theater experience. There's some movies I could care less to go in there and see, you know, and I'll catch it on Redbox,
and
go pick it up on the way home from work, you know. So it's going to be an adapting, continually adapting world for us filmmakers, and how we're going to market our films, how are we going to make our money as independent filmmakers. It's going to change, and maybe where it can become a viral ticket, you buy it online.
But don't you hear about a lot of aren't there a lot of not necessarily off the radar, but small success stories, you know. Someone you know that makes a documentary film, and, hey, man, he got a check for $1 million because they ran it in Europe and they did some other, you know, like that. There's like where it seems like kind of much like in the music business back in days of yore, you either had a major record deal and were in the loop or you weren't making money writing your own music and recording your own music. I mean, you used to either have a deal with, you know, Paramount Pictures and you're out there making films.
Right.
Or you weren't making money selling your VHS tapes
of
Indiana Jones and the Last Cow Patty.
Whereas
now there are plenty of examples of are there not? I mean, do you read about and hear about?
You do hear. You hear a lot of success stories on the
small films.
Pay-per-views, straight to DVD, smaller films that, you know, that have, you know, they're what has changed is that the distribution world has seen the value of the independent filmmaker and recognized that there are talented directors out there that have not come up through the studio system. And, you know, where back in the day, the studios, you know, the NBC or Warner Brothers, Sony, they all had their, their MGM, they had their list of directors, you know, that they would choose to, they'd have projects come in and pick to, and now it's totally changed. And they were employed
Right. I mean, Tom Cruise, wasn't he like one of the last? He was Paramount.
Yeah.
And he finally went on his own. But that's what really every actor is now, is just its own little universe.
Yeah.
Isn't that right? They're not tied to a studio.
Exactly.
If you want to make some money, you try to get a script in Brad Pitt's hands. You don't worry about getting a script to Paramount Pictures. What the hell are they going to do with it?
Right.
I mean, they, of course, they can, but.
Yeah. So
it's better to say, hey, Matt Damon loves my script and he wants to make it.
Exactly.
I mean, then you're.
I mean, that's
way.
What the actors become their own production company. A lot of
right, so, they have their own. They have their own
and their thing. Own entity. They're not belong. They don't belong to a studio. Which right. back in the day, in the heyday of Hollywood, that's
Cary Grant.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, actor was owned by a studio pretty much.
Right.
So in the independent world, really, if you can raise your own capital, there are distribution companies ready looking for. Filmmakers that that have a good product. I mean, you still have to have a good product. If you have a name attached, that makes your product more valuable to them as a distribution company because name.
Are there really that many avenues out there? I mean, is it? You make it sound easy to do, or is it hyper competitive and not?
I mean,
pay
I think
well?
You. I think you.
Or need, is it? Does it really exist? Is it a growing market?
There's. I think it's definitely a growing market. It's going to continue to grow. I think that you. What's great is you don't have to live in Hollywood. You don't have to live in L.A.
Well, here's my point.
Okay.
There's when music first was getting out there, Napster
right.
and
right.
iTunes. Man, now anybody can make a record in their bedroom. Isn't that awesome? And there was a little window where that was awesome because there wasn't a whole lot of bands trying to make a living playing music. Mm-hmm. So there was kind of a little nice thing. Oh, now I can do this. I don't have to go through these avenues.
Right.
But very quickly, it was swallowed up because you could make it in your bedroom. Now, instead of 100 bands coming out that day with their album, now it's just tens of thousands of – there's so much. So right now, I agree, it's still a big deal to say I have made a two-hour documentary film.
Right.
That's unusual.
Right.
Or a feature film. I mean, that there's not a lot of people that do that, that have the knowledge and the – but man, these cameras are getting cheaper and cheaper.
Right.
The editing stuff's getting cheaper and cheaper. And right now, maybe there's a nice moment where you don't have a whole lot of film product, quality
right.
product, but there are opening markets in online and Netflix and Europe and things like that and cable. But do you think very soon there's just going to be, dude, now every guy I know has made a movie, has of something, you know, or some reality garbage show that, I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to even get it seen anywhere now. I mean, do you think that – can you see that coming? Or do
well,
you think it's
I think
different?
I think the where the difference is with music and correct me if I'm wrong, music and filmmaking is – I mean, filmmaking for the most part takes a lot of people. And for,
a
I
lot of time.
A
two-hour
lot of time.
Movie,
a
right.
lot of time.
You got to have at least have a script.
I mean,
there's just
much involvement that goes into the logistics of building – I mean, it's like – you know, when we did our feature, we had a full company with 40,
you guys were shooting
45.
In time, you were shooting in Times Square.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's a great
in Chicago. And
yeah.
I mean, you don't have to do. You can simplify. You can do less locations. You can do less crew and all that. But what my point is that you can make a film and do it at a studio level, mm-hmm. For much cheaper and raise capital yourself from independent investors and compete. What I think with studio films, for instance, The Lone Ranger is about to go into production, and Johnny Depp is playing Tonto, Armie Hammer's playing The Lone Ranger.
Who's Lone Ranger?
Armie Hammer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they are spending they came down from $250 million mm-hmm. to $220 million for this.
Why do they need that much money?
Exactly. So I mean, it's a studio.
Of course,
he's write
Johnny Depp a check for.
Yeah, well,
something.
That's yeah. There's, we can do it. I believe cheaper, and there's opportunities. There's always going to be that.
Let's beat them to it, man.
Yeah,
I'll be Tonto.
Exactly. There's all these. There's always going to be. There's always going to be guerrilla filmmakers that have small crews and do great things, and they're going to be acknowledged. But that's on a different. I think that's on a different level than. You know, doing a full feature length deal with, I mean, there's just so much that goes into it. Not that you couldn't do it at a small guerrilla level. I know I have a filmmaker friend that was involved in a project about 8 years ago that won at Sundance. They mm-hmm. made it for $10,000
yeah.
and a small limited crew, you know, and it was, you know, they had all these doors in the studio world, open up to them. And this particular director wanted more control. And basically turned down all these opportunities and missed his small window, you know, of blowing up. So
right.
Because he wanted control, he thought he could go on and have control of everything. So that's
the lesson there is take the money.
Yeah.
Early on.
The other point I want to bring up in independent filmmaking is I worked in the studio system. I worked for Warner Brothers and NBC Universal for 7 years.
Where was that? Here in L.A.?
In Los Angeles.
Okay, yeah.
And worked over, 100-hour weeks in television. And just to see the creator of the show, how many voices that could interject and give their opinion on his product was kind of disheartening and made me want to shy away from being in a corporate studio setting.
Because if you want to keep your job, you got to listen to some of them. You know what I mean? They can just. I mean,
they all have.
Right?
No, they're corporate execs.
Yeah,
who, suits that are telling the creative to here's my notes.
A little more of this, a little less of this.
Yeah, right. And so that's what the beauty of independent filmmaking. It really. There were three of us that were deciding, three to four of us deciding every element from the music to, the shot, everything. And we weren't answering to anyone.
Right.
And at the end of the day, we have a product that I think is, can compete with other romantic comedies out there on this feature.
The language of a broken heart.
Exactly. Right. So I think, there's different elements. I think it's continued to evolve. I think it's an exciting time for filmmakers. And I think, like you said, there's great cameras that can come up and replicate the look of film where you're not paying for actual. I love film itself.
Sure.
So
we all love analog tape.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the music business.
Right.
But then it's just like, do we want to spend
It's a price
year
point.
Recording this song and
So
thousands of dollars, or do you want to do it right now?
And you see HD video. The studio filmmakers are now shooting on HD, and they're shooting the new Lord of the Rings is all on the red camera, and so
is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. So. I saw a
and they're $40,000 cameras.
Interview.
And you're not paying for film.
Yeah. Right. So. I saw an interview with Robert Rodriguez. You talking about. Digital, they're asking about film, and he just said, man, sure, film, yeah, he just goes, but man, he said, the only reason to use film now is just for, nostalgia's sake, or so. He goes, there's some qualities to it, but in his opinion, he just goes, man, you're just spending a lot of time, it's probably not worth it. If you're working with a limited budget and you're trying to get something done, he just goes, I just don't think it.
Yeah,
I mean cheapens the experience for the viewer. That was his
HD.
Opinion,
HD these days replicate. I mean, you can have cameras and lenses that replicate the look of film, and it almost is. Why would you use it? But there's just film purists that don't want to abandon that. Like I don't want to abandon the theater, but I have to adapt. So
Man, what about? I know y'all have you've always got a bunch of. Pet projects and things. Mm-hmm. You finished Language of a Broken Heart. Hope to see that in summer this summer in theaters.
Right.
We got our Old Man Football movie, hoping to getting out, premiering, and showing up on who knows where. Theaters, cable,
all of them.
Netflix,
everywhere.
ESPN, everywhere. what's down the road at Coffee Productions? You got scripts laying around and stuff?
Well, we have a couple. We've got one project that you're actually helping with, Phil, called Cubicle Cowboy.
Yeah, I was being coy. I know some of the answers, but our fans do not.
We've got a project, a pilot that it's called a pitch pilot that have shot called Cubicle Cowboy. That's like a Parks and Recreation office-style mockumentary situational comedy that is basically about Texas and some of the colorful characters in Texas. And we've got kind of a rockabilly type vibe with Phil's music throughout it, which we're excited to have. And we've got our lead actress in Language of Broken Heart plays the lead actress.
What's her name again?
Kate French.
Kate French, yeah.
Yeah, she's been on Gossip Girl, L Word on Showtime, and she has a big roster of credits. But
yeah.
She plays the West Texas pageant girl. This Cubicle Cowboy is a guy that
real estate guy,
Texas land and ranch real estate guy that thinks he's the
played
last
by one. Luke Coffey himself.
I am actually acting in this project, but so we're excited about that. It's I think it has there's Texas. We've unfortunately lost a lot of business to New Mexico and
really?
Louisiana.
Is that right?
Yeah, because
why is that?
Because tax incentives there are
so much
better.
Well, for a while, everyone was shooting in Texas.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 years, in the 90s.
In the 90s, it was supposed to be the Hollywood Southwest.
Well, they were. I mean, Sandra Bullock and they'd shoot other films here. They quit doing that kind of? Had the new laws passed?
We've gotten some better initiatives passed, but we need better initiatives in this state. So we, so that's why I'm trying to bring up, you know, bring as much work that I can do. I want to shoot it here. I mean, this is, we're a prettier state than New Mexico and Louisiana. I may be biased, I may be biased, but we are, and we have just the broader location range, I think, right, as far as the look of the land, and it can
mountains play, to swamp to desert.
It can play.
You need it?
Yeah, exactly.
Piney woods, let's do it. Yeah.
So we just need those initiatives. Beaches. We need those initiatives to get better so we can not
initiatives
lose all
like what?
Tax initiatives. Like the...
Like union scale, stuff like that? Or is that
no,
different?
No, it's more... No, if you come...
Because it's all right to work, right?
Yeah, it is right to work, which is, it does benefit
that
us,
helps.
But it's more or less like a independent filmmaker coming to New Mexico, even Michigan, and Louisiana. Well, Louisiana, at one point, I don't know where they are now, every $2 you spend... Yeah, spent in Louisiana, mm-hmm. you get a dollar back. So, and our initiatives are nothing like that. So it,
oh,
it's,
wow.
I mean, it's, ours are like at 20% age.
They write you a check?
I mean, state?
Yeah.
The state writes you a check back, yeah, after the project's over.
How do you
over,
prove you spent the money there?
I mean, it's just all documented budget and they spend. And
you say, well, we spent $200,000.
You're bringing work
just,
to...
Oh, here's,
yeah, and you're bringing work. You're employing their citizens of Louisiana.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and their actors. I mean, we're...
And you're showcasing their cities and
their cities
and
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
So... there's a lot of work going on there. So I'm trying to bring Texas some work, and what we don't have is a sitcom in Texas mm-hmm. that's Texas based, and I feel like there's a lot of potential for that. With we've had a great show that just wrapped up about a year ago called Friday Night Lights.
Yeah,
and we've had Dallas is coming back. There's a lot of emphasis.
Uh huh. Yeah.
There's a lot of emphasis on this state. You know, we so. That's where I'm trying to do with that. We also have a feature film that we just got the green light recently on called Texas Angel right now, dubbed Texas Angel. Title may or may not change. And it's a
full-length feature.
Full-length feature. It's based on a true story and on an experience I had in my life. And it's a love story, most of which takes place in Texas and some in Hollywood and in Los Angeles area. So,
and your friend Rocky Powell set to direct?
Rocky Powell's going to direct it, which he was our director on Language of Broken Heart. He's my good buddy as well. So we're excited about that. This is a big budget film that would be great for the state. And, and we're hoping to have Phil involved in as well.
Man, so. Bring me on board. Here I sit.
Yeah.
Here I sit, ready to roll, man. Ready to roll.
You know, I want it to feel like an epic type, you know, love story.
With a great soundtrack.
With a great soundtrack from the man, the myth, the legend, Phil the Pill Pritchett.
Just laying it on.
Oh, just making you melt.
Oh, man.
With his tune.
Oh, that'd be just so great. I mean, how fun would that be to really... Do a feature film, really get the...
Oh, man.
And y'all have already made a lot of strides, though. You've already got a lot of people interested in helping you out and getting the thing rolling.
We were ready to get it, I mean, get rolling somewhat in 2007 or 2008. Mm-hmm. And we, because of personal issues, we had to put it on hold. But we are back where we're ready to get rolling
along.
Yeah. And it's we kind of started out with this romantic comedy, smaller budget, and mm-hmm. kind of got our feet wet, and we're excited to go for a much bigger project, attach some big names, and have learned a lot in the whole filmmaking process where we think we're sitting well and pretty.
Oh, man.
I'm excited to have...
so exciting.
Yeah.
Well, with any luck, fans, you will be seeing Old Man Football, a documentary about Corpus Christi Carroll Tigers with Phil Pritchett music in it. And, man... How would you like to have me reporting in on a major motion picture that I am doing the music for? Wouldn't that just be fantastic? Good grief. And Luke Coffey, of course, our friend, would be at the helm of all of it. Thanks for dropping by today, Luke.
Not the helm. So I would be supported by many.
Supported by many, of course. Yeah. But the emotional center of the whole thing. There's no question about it. Yeah. Well, Luke has been here for the last 3 weeks, man, sharing his experience and thoughts on the movie industry, his own films, documentaries, feature films. It's so exciting, man. It's so exciting to have him over there in Dallas and up here in the Metroplex doing films and exercising.
I don't know what I'm going to do next week without meeting with you. Maybe we have to meet for some barbecue or something.
Maybe we could do a phoner. Have you phone in from Sammy's Barbecue.
Okay, yeah.
Let us know what's going on.
On location.
Yeah. Well, that is all the time we have. Call me, 817-733-5256, or email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Book the full band. The time is near. The summer is coming up, the spring. Got to get those private parties booked, man. Let me know where you're going to be. We'll come play for you. That's what we want to do. And, all kinds of new Pritchett music coming out this year. New album, new live album, soundtrack, Old Man Football album, and so much more. We will see you all, fans, next week, same time and same place. This is Phil Pritchett signing off from Trinidad World Recording Studios. We'll see you next week. Much tougher.